from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
A law enforcement official in Texas is in hot water for his treatment of illegal aliens. The Saudis are stirring up hate through textbooks. Science says men are men and women are women. And Paris burns because of climate change. That's all coming up on the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. And let me start today's program by expressing our condolences to the family of our 41st President, George H.W. Bush. We are a better nation because of his principled leadership and public service. Late last week, the Texas Attorney General filed the state's first sanctuary city lawsuit, accusing San Antonio police of hindering federal immigration enforcement by releasing a dozen people suspected of being in the country illegally. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins is the Attorney General of the Lone Star State, Ken Paxton.
Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, explain what's going on down there in Texas. The top law enforcement agent of the state, the Attorney General, having to take action against the police chief there in San Antonio?
Yeah, so the legislature, my job is to follow the law. So the legislature, as you said a year ago, passed a law that really did two things. One is it allowed law enforcement to ask about immigration status, never required it, but it gave them the ability to do so if they needed to. And second, it required that any elected official that was holding an illegal who had committed a crime or was suspected of committing a crime, if the federal government wanted them turned over, they needed to cooperate with the federal government. So in this case, the police chief had the 12 illegals who we suspect came from Guatemala. They were being smuggled in. There was no criminal background check run. The Child Protective Services were not called for the children. He released them to some immigration organization and had the federal government stand down, and they've disappeared.
So it's my understanding that a state investigation found that the police chief, William McManus, skirted protocol by ignoring Homeland Security's request to investigate this matter. So basically, essentially turning a blind eye.
That's exactly what happened. It was my office that did the investigation. It's our job to do the investigation and determine if there's been a violation of law. And it was clear from our investigation that that's exactly what happened. And as I said, these people have disappeared. We don't know where they are. We don't know if they have a criminal background because we know nothing about them because he failed to follow any kind of protocol in dealing with these people.
Now, Ken Paxton, you can have a differing views on immigration. But the law is the law, and while it remains the law, you would think that it would be the responsibility of law enforcement officers to uphold that law.
Absolutely. We all have different opinions on what should be done with immigration. I'm one that thinks that Congress needs to do a lot to deal with immigration and make this a system that works more efficiently for the people that we want to bring to this country. And we've been a country of immigrants for obviously since the beginning of our country. But in this case, the police chief has one obligation to enforce the law, just as is my obligation to enforce the law. And he failed. He decided, I guess, that he didn't like the law, and he decided not to enforce it. That is a problem under our state law.
So, Attorney General Paxton, this is, if I'm correct, I think this is probably the first big test against these sanctuary cities. I mean, you're taking some aggressive action here. This could be precedent setting.
No, there's no doubt. It's really not so aggressive. It's really just following the law. We're just literally
I say aggressive in that we've not seen aggressive enforcement of the law. I mean, that's one thing that Donald Trump has done from a federal standpoint. He's actually said, well, this is the law. Let's enforce it, which is a novel idea, given what we saw in the last 8 years.
Well, look, I advise the legislature, and when they want to pass a bill, we try to help craft it the correct way and help them pass it. But we don't influence policy. But when they pass a law like this, it's my job. It's what I swore to do, uphold the Constitution, uphold our state law. And so that's what we intend to do. And this was the very first complaint that we received on an issue like this, and we pursued it, and we found violations that we thought were very clear.
Well, I was, critical of the Obama administration for the lawlessness, and I think lawlessness is a threat to our republic, whether it's at the federal level or the state level. And what's ironic here, and you don't have to comment on this if you don't want, but those that are coming to this country are fleeing lawlessness, but by their lawless actions and those facilitating them, we become like the countries they're fleeing from.
No, you actually hit on a very, very valid and important point. The people that want us to ignore this are also not recognizing that that's what these people are coming to. They're coming here because they believe that we do have laws that are followed. They can be treated fairly. They can know what the law is, and they can decide to follow it or not follow it. So, you know, I think that's a very important point that I think a lot of people miss in this debate. And I do agree with you. Obama did this, and I think he created a culture of this. I think found more cities and more local governments and other people kind of adopting this sort of idea that, you know, the laws aren't for me. I can decide to enforce them or not enforce them if I like them. And that whole sort of idea became a very big part of the Obama administration. I think it spread throughout our culture.
Well, appreciate what you're doing down there in the Lone Star State in Texas. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Have a great day.
You can find out more about Ken Paxton when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the donate button. Your help can make all the difference. That website once more is tonyperkins.com.
Don't miss your opportunity to join other like-minded people and become an FRC STAN member. Join today and you'll receive empowering resources like Tony Perkins' book, No Fear, and for a limited time, Pastor Carter Conlon's book, It's Time to Pray. So become an FRC STAN member for $17 a month. That's just 56 cents a day. To join, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/stan. Thank you for partnering with us for the sake of America.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. A study by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom concludes that numerous passages in Saudi-created textbooks, which are shipped around the world, advocate intolerance and violence. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins is fellow commissioner Christina Arriaga.
Christina, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me on, Tony.
Now, Christine, I know that you have tracked this for some time, because this is not the first time that the commission has taken up this issue of the textbooks in Saudi Arabia. But this is a problem that really the West has focused on since 9/11, when that connection was made. But we're not seeing much progress coming from Saudi Arabia when it comes to the content of these textbooks.
No, we have not. For the last 15 years, the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom has been monitoring this issue. As you know, during 9/11, the vast majority of the extremists that killed so many of our people were indeed from Saudi Arabia. So our ally, Saudi Arabia, keeps saying that they're going to remove this extremist talk from their textbooks. But these books are still used in many countries, including the United States. In 2008, the commission uncovered a school in Virginia was still using these books.
Now, the content, give our listeners some idea of the type of content we're talking about in these textbooks.
The content is extremely inflammatory. It's false. Let me give you a couple of things that this year's book still say, and these are 22 books that are used currently in Saudi Arabia in middle schools and high school. One of the hadiths that he quotes is, hitting your wife is only permitted when necessary. In terms of religious freedom issues, anyone who makes fun of God, his verses, or his prophet is an apostate. No excuse is acceptable from him, regardless of whether he repents or is killed for infidelity. This precise hadith was used a few years ago in Nigeria against a Christian teacher who confiscated a copy of the Quran from a student. He ran out of the classroom saying that the teacher had disrespected the Quran, and as a result, there was a riot, and more than 20 Christians were killed in that village, and two churches at least were destroyed. These passages are found all over Africa, in the United Kingdom, in Pakistan. In fact, in 2010, in England, 15-year-olds who attended over 40 private Muslim schools were given diagrams on how to cut the hands of individuals who broke Sharia law by saying something like, Muhammad is not the last prophet.
Yeah, and Christina, what is so alarming about this report from USURF that was just released is not only has that intolerant content continued, but according to this latest analysis of these textbooks in the current school year, is that they have reverted back. They had made some progress in moderating, but they reverted back to some earlier, very intolerant, insightful language. So it looks like we're moving backwards.
Yes, and the textbooks are very specific about Jews and Christians. So, for instance, in the textbooks, this hatred for Jews and Christians, we were told by the Saudis, had been removed, and yet just in the latest report, we see there's no satisfying the Jews and the Christians except by disbelieving in Islam and following their faith. So you have, in Saudi Arabia alone, 33,000 public schools with 6 million students reading this every year. 200,000 of the students come to the United States every year under a Saudi education program. And all of these books, again, have been found in Algeria, Austria, China, in France, in Indonesia, in Somalia, in Tanzania, in Thailand, and the United Kingdom. And we at USURF have seen also that the older versions of the books that contain even more extremist language, are still using in all of these impoverished countries mm-hmm. that are breeding large numbers of terrorists.
And many of these countries are actually raising this issue. I've heard it as I've met with some of these officials of Islamic countries that have said, we want to kind of keep out these Saudi textbooks because they're radicalizing some of our young people, and we're concerned about it. So this is a problem that many countries are asking help for from the United States.
And from Saudi Arabia. It would be very easy for Saudi Arabia, which has a lot of oil money, to recall those books and pay those schools to return those books. And they haven't made the effort. Our own U.S. Ambassador Large for International Religious Freedom, Ambassador Brownback, has called out Saudi Arabia several times for not recognizing the right of non-Muslims to practice their religion in public. So this has to be resolved. And thank you so much for educating the public on this.
Well, Christina, as always, great to have you on the program, and look forward to seeing you at our next commission meeting coming up here shortly.
See you soon, Tony. Thanks.
You can find out more about FRC's involvement in the fight for religious freedom when you visit tonyperkins.com. And a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and we hope you'll take the time to donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener, replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet and share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. The College of Pediatricians has released a letter to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services supporting the Trump administration's decision to, quote, uphold the original scientific meaning and legal intent of the term sex in federal law, end quote. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to discuss the letter is the Executive Director of the American College of Pediatricians, Dr. Michelle Critella.
Dr. Critella, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Now, as a medical group, you felt that it was important to weigh in on this discussion because this has implications for the health and well-being of men and women.
Well, Absolutely. And I think it's important to note that although the American College of Pediatricians spearheaded the effort, there are other medical organizations who did sign on. So altogether, we represent over 30,000 physicians who treat men, women, and children. But yes, essentially, medicine is at the point now where we understand that men and women have, at a minimum, 6,500 different genetic differences between us. And this impacts every cell of our bodies, our organ systems, how diseases manifest, how we diagnose, and even treat in some cases.
So let me ask you about that, because that's intriguing. So someone could say, look, I feel like I am a I can say I feel like I'm a female. So I want to be identified as a female, even though biologically I'm a male. As a medical doctor, the protocols would require, in order to treat me appropriately, you have to treat me as a male, because that's what I am. Is that what you're saying?
Sure, on a couple fronts. I mean, the real obvious one, and I had this conversation with a gynecologist and a midwife, two different states, two different practitioners who had trans women, so these are biological men, who wanted to be treated by them. Neither of these men, although they dressed and were as women, took estrogen, they still had their male parts intact. Well, midwives and obstetrician gynecologists are not trained in doing testicular exams, prostate exams, or how males may present with different diseases or illnesses. And men do not have a cervix. They don't need pap smears. This is ridiculous. If you are a biological man who identifies as a woman, you need to have proper health care that a biological man needs. And then there are also cases, for example, heart disease, which can affect both sexes. It can present differently in women. Biological women are more likely to present with symptoms of fatigue, shortness of breath, or stomach upset. Physicians need to be aware of this to properly diagnose them. There are also many different drugs which can cause a deadly heart rhythm. And this deadly heart rhythm is more common, it's a more common negative side effect in women than it is in men. So these are nuances that medicine is finally studying and bringing to light, and it's actually rather ironic that the transgender movement and anti-science is spreading so rapidly in light of what we know from genetics.
So what you're saying is that science is actually showing us that there is greater distinction between men and women, especially in the way that they should be treated medically, but yet the ideological drive of the transgender movement is wanting to eradicate the scientific evidence that's there, or ignore it, I should say.
Correct. They want to ignore it. I mean, essentially, the transgender activists are saying, look, I think, or the transgender individuals, I think and feel this way as the opposite sex, therefore I am. And it's one thing for us to, as physicians, to treat the person with respect and honor their name change, but it would be a complete...
It would be malpractice.
It would be malpractice to treat them as the opposite sex. Exactly.
Because in this letter, what you lay out is not only there are the distinctions, but treating them the wrong way could have catastrophic effect. I mean, someone could die because you're not treating them based upon their biological genetic makeup.
Correct. That's right. A man on estrogen is not a woman. He is a man with a male physiology on estrogen, and that's how a physician must approach him.
Dr. Curtella, one final question for you. In this letter, it states that gender identity is not a material trait found anywhere in the body, brain, or DNA. What is it?
It is a person's perception, our awareness of our bodies, and our comfort with our bodies, right? It's in our thoughts. There is absolutely no rigorous science that has found a trait called gender identity in the brain, in the body, or the DNA. Now, sex, hey, I can show you that. It's in our sex chromosomes. It's in the body. It's in the reproductive organs. Over 99.98% of the time, our sexual development, the is clearly, unambiguously, either a male or female.
And what you and the 30,000 doctors are just calling on the administration, or actually supporting the administration and saying, stick with the science, male, female?
Right. Stick with the science. The original legal intent of the law was to protect women against sex-based discrimination. Stick with the scientific definition.
Dr. Michelle Critella, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Dr. Critella when you visit tonyperkins.com. And a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and we hope you'll take the time to donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom. Together, we will work to protect life, marriage, and religious liberty in our country. If you give before December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/2018. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. It appears that so-called Yellow Jacket protesters are behind the recent riots in Paris. Burned out cars and broken glass clutter famous landmarks throughout the city. These Yellow Jackets are typically used for emergencies, but have become a symbol of the fight against rising fuel taxes being pushed by the Prime Minister of France, Emmanuel Macron. Joining Tony to talk about this issue is Dr. Calvin Beisner, founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation.
Cal, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. Poor Monsieur Macron. You have to feel sympathy for him. He really got hit on this one. But he's finding out that, you know, when people discover that fighting climate change actually costs them something, suddenly it's not quite so popular anymore.
Exactly. And that's the point. It's not the people clamoring for this, because they, when they hear all these, when they see the results, I should say, of all of these, rhetorical speeches that are painting these portraits of doom and gloom and all these promises that they're going to do all these great things. But the bottom line is, when it's going to cost you more to get to work or go to the grocery store or take your kids to soccer practice, all of a sudden, the public's not behind them.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Tony, of course, the UN Climate Summit is going on right now in Katowice, Poland. And, you know, the scientific evidence all points away from catastrophe. And yet the conference goes blindly on. Well, why is that? I think the best explanation of that came 8 years ago when Otmar Edenhofer, who was at the time a co-chairman of the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, he said, leading up to the climate summit in Cancun, quote, "The climate summit is not a climate conference, but one of the largest economic conferences since the Second World War. One must say clearly that we redistribute de facto the world's wealth by climate policy. One has to free oneself from the illusion that international climate policy is environmental policy. This has almost nothing to do with environmental policy anymore." End of the quote. Well, now, the summit is all about politics and not about climate, not about the environment.
Well, and that is really the approach that our neighbor to the north, Trudeau, is pursuing with his climate change initiative, which involves increased taxes on energy consumption, is a redistribution of wealth. He's going to give rebates back to people.
Yeah, and the big redistribution that's being talked about at the climate summits is not within individual nations, which is a problem enough. It is instead specifically from the developed nations in the world to the developing nations in the world, starting off with a $100 billion a year climate fund, and then growing from there to include things like what they're calling in these conferences loss and damage. That is, the developed nations supposedly committing to pay for damage suffered in developing nations because of climate change. But at this point, I mean, goodness, people are blaming thousands of different kinds of problems on climate change, including hurricanes, tornadoes, things like that, that have been going on all through Earth's history. So now, suddenly, the United States is going to have to pay Indonesia if a typhoon hits there. This is the kind of thing that's being talked about. It's a pure effort at theft by the developing world, the mostly socialist developing world, from the developed, mostly capitalist world.
No scientific consensus that climate change is man-made. No measurable effect by the proposals that are being put out there. Again, we see no public support, no overwhelming public support. In fact, you can make the argument for the opposite. So what's driving it? Who's behind this? What's it about?
What's driving it really is efforts toward a new world order. The French president, I've forgotten now which one it was, but back in 2001, the French president at the time said that the Kyoto Protocol, which was the earlier version of what has become the Paris Climate Agreement, was the first step toward global governance. That's what these folks want, and it has been behind the whole socialist and particularly communist movement all along. I mean, Soviet Russia was committed to international socialism and indeed embraced Marx's notion that socialism could never work unless it became global. That's been the aim all along, and it hooked its wagon to the environment, hooked its star to the environmentalist wagon a long time ago, back in the 70s and 80s. And now climate is the big excuse.
Cal Beisner, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks very much, Tony, and God bless you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.